I'll tell you what, before you start, let me tell you, I wrote this copy for this client yesterday.
And the spot starts with, bite me.
Of course, I was waiting for the client to say, well, Charlie, mosquitoes don't bite, they sting. But fortunately, this guy got where I was going with it.
They don't sting. They're bites.
Right. No, mosquitoes sting you.
No, it's a proboscis. They jab it in and suck blood out of you. It's not a stinger, Charlie. It's a biter.
Oh, it's not. Oh, well, then, see? I knew it's that. I was ready for him.
Yeah, that's why you have a wasp sting and a bee sting, but a mosquito bite.
Okay, because if he calls and gives me shit about that, I said, hang on, I got a guy in Sydney, Nebraska we need to talk to. Hold on a minute.
No, he's not going
to
give you any crap about that.
It's because he knows what it's called and I can't pronounce it, so.
It's a bite. It's from.
No. The poblano mosquito, whatever you call it, Poblaski or whatever.
Proboscis.
That's the one.
So we're 3.5 minutes in already, and we've got a good story.
Oh shit! Are we started already?
I told you I started recording.
Oh jeez.
Yeah,
okay.
I got all that.
Is this the real show? Come on, seriously. That's this is not the real show.
Well, I may actually cut some pieces out of that.
Okay, but none of the profanity. Okay.
What, you don't like profanity?
I don't want to be the Lenny Bruce of Wizard of Ads Partners.
All right. Let's do, though
my mother would tell you, he certainly qualifies.
Yeah, your mom will listen to this and go, well, gosh, Charlie, you cleaned it up a little bit.
That's it. What is it? The red light comes on. We talk like choir boys. The light goes out. We talk like sailors, right?
That's right. Welcome to the Branding Blog Podcast. I'm Dave Young. And this week, I've got another one of my partners that I've been wanting to talk to for a while now. And we finally got our schedules aligned, I guess would be the right word. And
synchronized.
Thank you, Charlie.
I'm here for you. I'm a work guy.
Go ahead. Maybe you should introduce you instead of me.
No, you're doing a great job.
Am I doing all right so far? I'm doing the easy part so far. Now we know that your name is Charlie. And so when we went back and forth with email and you wanted to know, what the topic of the podcast was going to be.
I know there's going to be an edit there. Go ahead.
You think?
Yeah.
You think I'll edit this out? Probably not. I'm a lazy editor, Charlie. So anyway, when we're going back and forth in the emails talking about what we might want to even sit down and talk about, and I told you this is just a rambling conversation. Primarily, I want to know how to pronounce your last name. So you have to say it.
You pronounce it like it has a J instead of a G.
Well, so why don't you just put a J in it?
Because my French ancestors would object to that. I don't know.
Okay. So Charlie Moger.
Charlie Moger. Yeah, it was actually, when legend holds that when the first Moger came across through Ellis Island, it actually is spelled with a T instead of an R. So it was Moger. Mm-hmm. And for a brief humiliating time in my middle school career, I tried changing it to that.
Moger.
Moger, yeah.
I could see that going over really well.
Huge,
Where were you in middle school?
I started in Newtown, Connecticut.
Okay.
And up in Fairfield County. And then for some reason, we moved to northern New Hampshire in between the 7th and 8th grade. And I will tell you and listeners and Mr. and Mrs. America and all the ships at sea that is possibly the worst year you could ever move a kid. And I love my mom, but good Lord. So going from Fairfield County, Connecticut to Cowas County, New Hampshire. Between the 7th and 8th grade, when you're figuring out who the hell you are, it was like, but years of therapy and mind-altering drugs, and I'm fine now.
And so it's Moger.
Moger. Yeah, shut. Thanks.
Moger.
Thank you, Dave.
Charlie Moger. So it's like Major with an O, or it's like Folgers without an L and an S. And anyway, it's Moger.
You are way ahead of me on word association this morning. So,
all right. Well, it's one of those things where half the time I say it one way and half the time I say it another, and I'm never quite sure. And I always, and I know I, Charlie, I've even asked you to say it for me before, and then I forget because that's just.
See, I have the same problem with yours. I'm never really quite sure.
Yeah, it's spelled Y-O-U-N-G, but it's pronounced Wazalewski, and most people just don't understand that.
Exactly. Yeah, it's when I married when my first wife and I got married, I told her that her maiden name was McEachern, And she thought, and I said, and when she saw how many different ways there were to pronounce my last name, including some that we'll leave out for the family show, that I said, you thought it was going to be easier because it was fewer letters, but not so much.
Yeah, I've never had that problem of people not being able to figure out how to say my name.
It's because you have the, you know, one of those perfect radio names.
Two syllables.
Dave Young.
You know, growing up, there was always a news guy. He's probably still on Denver television, but there's a newscaster on one of the Denver TV stations named Dave Young.
Yeah. Brian Williams has the same problem.
Yeah.
With a guy in Canada.
So, well, Charlie, so the other thing, we've got the name pronunciation. Let me just check that off my list. The other thing, I wanted to get a little background. You're one of our Wizard of Ads partners, and you're located in Houston.
God bless Texas.
You bet. Thriving metropolis of Houston.
The shining buckle on the Bible Belt, Bubba.
That's it, huh?
That's what it used to be called, but I'm here to tell you that. Not so much these days.
Not so much.
Yeah.
So let's go back. I confused myself here. So as a youth in America, you were up in the northeast part of the country.
Yeah, I grew up. I tell people I was born in New York, raised in Connecticut, finished in New Hampshire, and baked to a golden brown in Boston. So that's kind of
oh wow.
I would say my mom divorced my dad when I was very young. I mean, about five and. Moved to Connecticut, and then, like I said, for some reason, they moved to New Hampshire, and honest to God, I never understood why we moved from a place where you were a couple hours out of New York City. Mm-hmm. I mean, if there's if you put a gun to my head and said I had to live on the East Coast, that'd probably be a good place to live, because that's what it would take to get me to move up there. But New Hampshire? Didn't quite get it until Tracy and I went up there for my 20th high school reunion. Mm-hmm. And by then, I was married and had kids and owned a house.
And so then you start looking at places differently.
I drove into Whitefield, New Hampshire, and as we crossed over the bridge and saw the kids sitting there fishing in the stream with their bikes against the edge and the bandstand in the middle of the common and people standing on the corners talking to each other, I was like, I wanted to call mom and say, I get it.
You expect to see Norman Rockwell with an easel sitting on the side of the road somewhere, right?
Or Andy Griffith on the corner. And it's that kind of town. It's they got one police car. And the only traffic light in town is the blinking one in front of the volunteer fire department. And when I graduated high school, I left the engine running. I couldn't wait to see Whitefield in my rearview mirror. And really – other than a weekend now and then from college, the first time I went back was that reunion.
Wow.
And today I subscribe. I still get my hometown newspaper. Because it's kind of fun now to look back and connect with those early days.
That's cool. So you got into radio at some point. I assume you went off to school somewhere and then you were in the radio business in Cape Cod.
Oh, I actually started it's funny. I was thinking about this when you told me that what we're going to talk about this morning, and I had a memory of this driving to work this morning. When I was about 9 or 10 years old, my mom took me to New York City. Just the two of us went to Manhattan for just go to New York. And I was looking forward to going on the Circle Line around Manhattan and going up the Empire State Building, maybe out to the Statue of Liberty and things like that. And on the tour also was a trip to 30 Rockefeller Center on the now no more NBC tour. And if you talk to anyone of the day who went on that tour, they know what I'm talking about, because they stopped it after 9/11 and it came back after, but like original Coke, when it came back, it wasn't the same.
Mm-hmm.
But this tour, I mean, they took you, the NBC pages meet you in the lobby at 30 Rock, and they take you up and they walk you through, they showed you where the soap operas were being produced and walk you through the news department. And you saw the set for the old Johnny Carson show. And I was like, wow, this is so cool. I'm like really digging on TV. But geez Louise, it takes a lot of people to do it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I'm thinking, damn. And so And then they walked us up through NBC News at that time was doing something called ITS, Information Talk and Sports. It was an idea that they were shipping out modular radio programming of news and information that stations were picking up, and then they were dropping in their local stuff in it to create news talk stations in small markets.
Okay.
I mean, way ahead of its time. And it failed miserably because the technology wasn't there yet to support it. Today, I keep waiting. When's somebody going to do that? But anyway, don't get me started. But then they took us off to this room and into this little studio. And they said, this is the studio where we used to originate a radio show called The Shadow.
Oh, yeah.
And he says, and we're going to demonstrate it for you right now. And they turned off the lights. And it was coal mine black in there. And that suddenly, you know, you heard the sound effect of a harbor and the foghorn and a slight rain on the water and shoes walking up a wet pier. And it went on, a thunderstorm and conversation between two guys and a gunfight and all that. And they turned on the lights and there are three guys standing there, you know, two guys, mm-hmm. you know, at the mic and the sound effects. And a guy on the board, and that was it. And I went, oh, "I'm in. This now, is it."
Were they playing recorded sound effects, or were these guys Foley artists?
They were doing it right there.
Yeah. Okay.
I mean,
cool.
They literally had the old Thunder case.
Big, mm-hmm.
Yeah, where you just push the handle and it makes thunder on the big piece of sheet metal hanging inside the echo chamber and stuff like that. I was just, oh, this is the deal, and I was hooked on radio. Started at 9 years old, I decided that that's what I wanted to do with the rest of my life. And to one extent or another, Dave, it is pretty much at 52 what I've done for the past, you know, however long, I'm not good with math, but, you know, all those years. And and it was the pivotal moment. And when we moved up to New Hampshire, there, and I remember looking forward then to the high school because they had a radio station at the high school in Connecticut.
Oh, okay.
And then we moved. And so... And so when I got to high school, I said, well, we need a radio station. And so I bugged them till they let me build one at the radio at the high school. You know, it played on the speakers there mm-hmm. and, you know, and stuff like that. And then I went to the local radio station because I told my mom I wanted to be on the radio. And she asked me a question that has stayed with me ever since when I think about wanting to be on the radio. She said, you want to be on the radio? What do you have to say?
Mm.
I thought, yeah, that's. I mean, talk about sage advice. And my mom taught me a lot about marketing, but my parents both did. But I went to WLTN in Littleton, New Hampshire. A guy named Jack Bowman used to run it, and he was one of these old, you know, nicotine finger hand guys, and you know, what do you want, boy, kind of guy, you know.
Yep.
Been around radio. You know, he's one of the ones warning you that it was a cesspool. Don't get in it, and all that stuff. I'm like, yeah, I want to get in.
Was it back when everything in the studio was coated with nicotine?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. There's a film on all the windows. I mean, and the soundboard, like when I got my first sales job at a big radio station in Houston, it was at KIKK, which is sadly gone now, as most great radio stations. Don't get me started on that either. But I walked into the back door Kick one time, and I smelled that mix that, if you could put it in a bottle, the smell of a old-time radio station was newsprint, nicotine, and stale coffee.
Yeah, yeah. Well, the newsprint had a mix of oil in with it that came off the teletype machines.
Teletype, exactly right. Yeah.
So it's that newsprint smell, all those rolls of paper mixed with the oil coming off of that thing, and then everybody in the building smoking.
Right.
You know, all the guys in the announcer booth are smoking and blowing it straight into the microphone.
Because they want to have that voice.
That's right.
And they're doing the chloroseptic. And I missed the part about drinking scotch the night before. But, you know, it was too late until I figured that part out. But anyway, so I go to Jack Bowman at the ripe old age of 13 thinking I'm ready. You know? And he brings me into the studio to do a cold reading test. You know, and he reaches over and he starts the Magnacorder recorder, you know, and little 5-inch reels on it.
And he taps me on the back with a yardstick to start, and I'm like, yeah, sound like Andy Hardy trying to read the news, you know. And he said, okay, read it over once and then try it. Well, I failed. I just crashed and burned. And a couple of years later, the station changed hands, and I went back and so bugged the owner. Peter Idelot was his name. He bought the station. I bugged him and bugged him and bugged him till he gave me a job.
Mm.
And I remember sitting up there because every time we go to the Jack's Junior Theater in Littleton, New Hampshire, you come out the front door and you look up across the street, and there was the studio window on the side of the building, and you see that red light coming on and saying, I want to be on there. And every time, to this day, Dave, I think you're a radio guy, you know this. To this day, there is nothing that stirs my imagination like when I'm driving at night, like seeing the beacon of a tower on a hill. You know, you just think the magic of of what we're doing right here. Two voices, just creating a story in a space, and I think that's what drew me to ultimately forward into marketing, you know, and advertising, you know.
And
so that's
how
it started.
A lot of people. I shouldn't just say guys because, you know, got to be politically correct here.
Humans, mostly humans.
Mostly, yes. It's mostly humans working in the radio business.
And the management at Clear Channel. Right.
Hey, you said that. I didn't.
Hey. After RIF, I got a lot of people side with me on that one.
But what ends up happening is people get into radio for all the reasons that you just gave. Mm-hmm. And then they transition into the marketing side, into the sales side, the advertising side, primarily because nobody would pay you enough to you know, raise a family as a guy on the air.
It happened in Houston for me. Mm-hmm. I'd been on the radio when I went to college. I went through a series of jobs. I went to college for a couple of years in Keene, New Hampshire, and had a silly disagreement with the registrar over my grade point average.
Oh, yeah.
I kind of an open-ended opportunity to go reflect
on
my goals.
They're so picky, Charlie.
Picky. I'm like, come on. It's so, and I was like thrilled because I'd been offered a job doing overnights at WCFR in Springfield, Vermont, and that was my big coming out on the radio. I got to be a full-time guy, and, you know, I was making, you know, with all that they were paying me, I didn't know what I was going to do with $14,000 a year, you know? And,
oh, yeah.
And that was back in 1979, so it was actually a fair amount of money, you know, in a small town. But anyway, I did work there for a year, and then had a chance to go with a friend to Boston. It was actually a woman I was going out with at the time, and she was taking courses at Emerson College. And I went down to visit her, and she said, why don't you come with me to class, and then we'll go, you know, out to dinner with her. Okay, so I went to... And I walked into the class at Emerson College, and I looked around, and it's what I call my Alex Haley roots moment. You know, it was like, my people, you know. It was like, I didn't know this place, kind of place existed on earth. I mean, it was like, and it became my burning drive. And after flunking out of Keene State College in Keene, New Hampshire, I thought my college career was over, and I wound up fighting my way into Emerson College and graduated with honors.
Oh, way to go.
It was, it's one of those great accomplishments in your life. You think about, that's one of the pillar moments of my life is that, you know, I proved something could be done. But while I was in college, I was working a series of radio jobs, and I was doing this all request oldies show up in Manchester, New Hampshire, and while living in Boston. And I towed all my records up there on Saturday nights, and I do this 6-hour all request show. And for radio folks, it was a 5-tower array AM back in. And you had to take your readings every hour.
Man. Yeah.
And the statute of limitations is over. So, you know, I took them at the beginning and the end and averaged them in between. So,
we used to do that for the month.
Yeah, exactly. I remember, you know, when I told somebody that I actually had to cheat to get my Element 9 FCC license because I could never remember the calculation for figuring effective radiated power. So I wrote it on my wrist under my watch band. I got this, you know, this one. Person, I still won't talk to me this day. I can't believe you cheated on a government test. I'm like, okay, today I'd get a cable show for doing that. But anyway, it was by that oldie show that I was doing up in New Hampshire actually got me my first job out of college on Cape Cod. I was working in addition to going to college and doing this oldie show on Saturday nights. I was working for this advertising agency in Boston that only did political campaigns. And down the street was a guy named Rob Covecchio, who ran a company called Soundtrack Studios. And it's there to this day on Washington Avenue in Boston on the North End. And he had taken a liking to me, and he loved what I did with the show. And he says, you know, my buddy Larry Justice, who just left WBZ in Boston and bought a station on Cape Cod, is looking for a guy who does an oldie show. You need to call him. And I sent him a tape, and Larry hired me, and the rest is history. I moved to Cape Cod and eventually became the operations manager, met my wife, and was very happy there. And until one day, Larry... Dave, you know me fairly well.
Yeah. Yeah.
He hired me to do the oldie show, but, you know, it's a small market, and you can't hire somebody just to do a Saturday night oldie show. So he hired me to be the continuity and traffic manager for the station. Do I seem a fit for that job to you?
And this is pre-computerized traffic?
We were doing it with strips. Actually, we computerized the traffic while I was there. We went to this – we had this huge – I mean, this thing
– because, I mean, it used to be you'd have to go through every single broadcast order and then find a time to write the ads on the log.
We used the strip
system. That's how we did it.
We used the strip system that you'd copy on the copier back then. But then, you know, I was also continuity. So I had to manage production, make sure the right spots were in the right places and the right numbers on the right log on the right days. And, you know, I get a rash thinking about that much detail even today.
Yeah,
no, not so much. And so I pretty much screwed that job up every way I could. And I'd get to work at, like, Larry was the morning guy on his own radio station. And he went on the air at 6. So I'd get to work every morning at 5 just to make sure everything was where it belonged for his show.
Well, he'd stay like 30 minutes ahead of everybody, right?
Right. That's about it. You know, and to this day. But anyway, so I remember one morning he got mad. He came out of the studio and he's the studios were on the main floor and the offices were down in the basement on Cape Cod. And he called me up and he called my name and I poked my head up. Just in time to see something coming toward me, and I pulled my head back, and I had the wrong cart in the studio yet again. And he flung this plastic cartridge, you know, it's about the size of a paperback book, right? And except it doesn't have, you know, it's like an 8-track tape.
Yeah, exactly.
It didn't have the capstan.
Same size as an 8-track.
Right, right. And it comes flying down the stairs. I see this thing coming toward me and literally dodging a bullet. Pull my head over, and the thing shatters on the wall behind me. Mm-hmm. And he says a lot of things he would never say on the air, and I went back into my office, and I sat down. And I went, there's got to be a better way to make a living. literally. And I picked up Radio and Records magazine. Remember that?
Yeah.
And on the back of it, they used to have all the job ads in the back. And on the back cover of the ad was this little ad down on the bottom. It said, Promotions and Marketing Director, 97 Rock Houston, an ABC owned and operated radio station.
Mm.
I thought, well, that'd be fun. And so... I applied, and they flew me down to Houston. And I told Tracy, you know, who's none of her family had ever left New England, never mind Cape Cod. And I'm saying, well, we're going to go down to Texas, you know, the land of flat.
Have you committed?
And I told her, look, here's how it's going to work, honey. We're going to move to Houston. If I get this job, we'll go to Houston. We'll work there a couple years so it looks good on my resume. Then we'll go to a big city.
Mm-hmm.
Because I'm from New England, Bob. You know, I'm in Boston. You know, the New Englander's view of the world. Boston, New York, Philadelphia, L.A.
How big could Houston be? Yeah.
I'm here to tell you. So, I'll tell you what. So, anyway, so I flew down and they drove me into town. And I remember coming down I-45 into Houston. And there's a point on the city that, you know, there's... It is, I think, is one of the pretty views of Houston, and you got to really look for them. Coming into town, and all of a sudden, the skyline rises up like the Emerald City, and my head literally went back on the headrest of the van. I was like, damn, how there's no way. And the van driver said, what city is that over there? You know, because I'm from New England, where a city is, you know, basically 12 blocks, right? I look at, what city is that over there? And the guy says, oh, that's the Galleria. That's Houston. Yeah, what about that over there? That's the medical center. This is all Houston. He goes, yeah. He says, the metropolitan area of Houston is almost the size of Rhode Island, Charlie.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, I sat back in my chair on my way to KSRR to meet Bill Moffitt for my interview and thought to myself, well, I got a free plane ride, day off. This is kind of fun. I'm not, never, no chance in hell I'm going to get this job. I am over my head. And he offered me the job. And moved down, and Bill Moffitt changed my life.
And so, and you're still in Houston.
Took me from the wingtips, what I used to say, it took me from the sandal side to the wingtip side of radio in a half step. Because promotions in a good radio station back in the day, the promotion department was as much a part of sales as it was programming. Mm-hmm. It worked. It was really the mortar between the bricks. And ABC, and I had that opportunity to work at ABC during the halcyon days, those last days of great radio when ABC still owned it. And it was two of the best years of my radio career without comparison to anything else.
Well, that's pretty awesome. And so we're talking, what, mid-80s?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, about 1980. Yeah, we moved down in 85.
Okay.
And didn't buy land. So just to erase any misconception, somebody thinks I have brains.
And so from radio, how did you transition into just straight advertising? You've been doing primarily radio and, well, general agency kind of things, haven't you? I mean, tell me about that.
I got out of radio the same way everybody does. I got fired.
Station changed hands and...
Yeah, ABC. Well, actually, you know, the week after I got the job, on the front page of Radio and Records was ABC Cap Cities merger. And here are the stations that are going to have to spin off because of the old ownership caps.
Oh, right.
Yeah, because they own Channel 13 here in Houston, which is the bell cow of the Cap Cities, was one of their bell cow stations. That mm-hmm. and PRI in Providence, or PRO in Providence. You know, they're never going to let go of those. And so, you know... So off went KSRR. It got spun off to Mallrite, which I, you know, they came down to Houston to 97 Rock, and which was just a smoking hot, very corporate, almost Superstars kind of Abrams kind of format, just to give you an idea of the kind of mm-hmm. AOR it was, and said, no, we're going to make it like the Buzzard in Cleveland. And okay, well, what does that mean? Yeah, well, we're going to play a lot more of everything. And the first time I walked into the control room, Moby was the morning man. Moby, get your lazy asses out of bed, Moby in the morning. And mm-hmm. He came in and he shook his head and looked at me. He was playing LaGrange by ZZ Top. I swear to God, I couldn't believe my eyes when I looked at the next record on the playlist. I looked at him, really? He goes, yeah, it's all over, Charlie. The next song was The Bangles. I'm like, run! And so they basically ran that thing into the they ruined the station. I got canned in one of the many changes of personnel.
Isn't it crazy? And this applies to advertising and marketing too. Mm-hmm. Is mm-hmm. I can remember some of those crazy formats mm-hmm. where the theory was we're going to please everybody by right. playing every kind of music.
And today, you know, it's like I was listening to one up in Portland when I was up there on my honeymoon, Charlie FM, and then there's the Jack format around the country where they say, we play everything. And that's true. They play everything from a very carefully selected list of 300 records.
Exactly. <You know>? Yeah.
But back then, they really were playing everything.
Mm-hmm.
And that was back in the days when stations used to do – anyway, we digress. You're talking about advertising. So I got canned and decided it was time for me to get into sales, and I started flying back to New England to interview for sales jobs in radio because I decided that's it. I'm going to get into sales, and I interviewed at WTIC in Hartford and stations in Boston around New England and all that, and I just couldn't get arrested because I was basically an entry-level seller. And Tracy, God bless her, she said to me one day, well, Charlie, you know, there are radio stations here in Houston. You ever think about trying to sell for one of those?
Yeah, but you remembered that promise you made to get back to New England.
Right. Well, it was kind of, yeah.
So you
got into sales. I went into sales, made in the station I went to, I went from entry level to top biller in less than a year. I can't remember the exact time span now. It's been slept since then. But then I went, that station blew up, and I went over to KIK. And I went from KIK to KTRH, the news talk station, where I just... That was, in sales, the days of milk and honey. We were paid 20% commission on directs and 18% on agency. I mean, it was just, you could make a lot of money in radio sales back then. And I did. And as I went, and the reason I did as well as I did was that I didn't sell radio.
I sold solutions. I came up with ideas for clients. I wheeled and dealed, and I was doing what I did in promotions, but I was doing it in sales and paid for it. And I was thinking, this is a good deal. Until one day, we were bought by a major broadcaster who operates more radio stations in America than anyone else.
Clear Channel.
You said it and I didn't.
Yeah, yeah.
But,
I didn't put any pejoratives with it this time.
Well, no.
That's okay.
Well,
no, I mean, there's
in my house, we lovingly refer to them as the Borg. But
they bought everything.
They bought everything and sucked the culture out of everything. You bet. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, God bless them. I understand what they're trying to do. You know, or as we say in Texas, bless their heart. But
the radio industry went from
mom and dad,
as you said, yeah, mom and dad ownership caps
because at the end of the hall.
You didn't the biggest ownership company around could own what 11
7 and 7.
Then it went to 11 maybe.
Yep.
And so you didn't need a publicly traded company to grow that big.
The 80s, 70s, 70, 30, whatever it was, the short, and then you had the short move ins and all that, and just I remember I was working at KTRH, and I had this dream of going back to New England. My life's dream back then was to go back to Littleton, New Hampshire, and buy that radio station and maybe a couple others, and just go back to New Hampshire and be the guy who knew the mayor and the fire chief and owned the radio station and raise my family and be happy. And I called, and I had gathered about $100,000 in the bank, and I had access to more. And I called Peter because I was ready to buy the radio station. And he said, Charlie, I won't sell it to you, not because you can't, but you shouldn't. He says, the days of single operators are over. And this was before it really hit. Mm-hmm. And so it was like early warning. And it took me a couple of years to get over that broken heart that I had to give up that dream. And it's like, it's a Garth Brooks moment for me in the sense that, you know, thank God that dream never came true. thank God.
God for unanswered prayers. Yeah.
Amen, brother. And so, So I wound up working in sales, and then they came to me, and as a KTRH, after about 5 or 6 years there, I was the top biller again and again. Wound up being back in when AM/FM owned it, I was the top billing news talk rep in the country. I was top billing sales rep in the market because most of my stuff was direct, and I was also the top new business generator. And therein lied the secret, was I was always putting more people in, and I had lots of little guys, and I never went after the big fatted calves. And that's how I got to the top of the heap there. And what happened was, because I was wheeling and dealing, all these little businesses said, you know, can you help us with this too? And after a while, I said, I'm starting to make some money on the side. So I put together, got a DBA, set my bookkeeping for Mojer Media, and started making business on the side. I made $50,000 on the side my last 2 years there. You know, each of the last 2 years I was there, it was a good deal. And
that's just doing some of the things that a typical advertising agency would do for these people or other stuff.
Keeping the, you know, what we do today, being a North Star for somebody, you know, just keeping the messaging on message, keeping helping them make wise purchase decisions, keeping them from not – it's just helping, counseling, you know, and getting into a lot of things other than radio and TV. And it was a great time. And I remember the manager sat me down one day and said, Charlie, we want you to shut down this Mojer Media thing because it's a conflict of interest under Clear Channel rules. And I said, why? You know, I really kind of – I was listening to the Steve Jobs biography lately, and I'm thinking, you know, it was kind of like the same thing. I was like, no. No, that's not how I see it. And he put his hand – and he said to me, Dave, this was the moment I knew I was leaving radio. He held one hand about 6 inches off the desk, and he says, you're making about this much on the side, Charlie. And he puts his other hand above his head about 2.5 feet up off the desk and says, and you're making this much here. And he shakes the high hand and says, think how much more money you could be making. And then he shakes the low one, if this wasn't in the way. And my mom and dad.
In the way.
If my mom and dad were both entrepreneurs growing up, they both signed both sides of their checks all their lives, right?
Right.
And so my little entrepreneurial brain heard that exactly the other way. And I said, let me sleep on it.
Yeah.
And got in my car, got on my cell phone, called my attorney, started my papers of incorporation, did my agreements with my clients, and went back a couple weeks later, you know, when he wanted his answer. And I said to him, I've been thinking a lot about what you've been saying, and I think you're right. And I'm going to be leaving.
Yeah.
And this letter of resignation. And he was like stunned. He couldn't believe I was really going to do it. And
well, because he was looking at those two numbers in the exact opposite way that he should have been.
Remember that book, Who Moved My Cheese?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I called bullshit on that book fairly early because I was like, okay, hang on a minute. This ignores the obvious answer. Why doesn't he get up on top of the trap and look around and figure out where the cheese is instead of running around inside the trap?
Well, or I have a friend who actually wrote a kind of a counter to that book called Make Your Own Damn Cheese.
Right. Amen. And that's kind of what I did.
And when you look at those two stacks, he's looking at it and saying, well, if you weren't doing this little thing on the side, imagine how much bigger this one would be. When the reality is the big one is as big as it is because you're doing those things on the side for those people. Right. Yeah. I mean, if you weren't helping them with a lot of other things, they wouldn't be spending as
for
much
most,
with you.
For the most part, I think it's probably pretty true. Yeah. The trap salespeople get into, and what traps them in a sales career, is they believe that they're making – they look at what they're making and they look forward saying, that's what I make.
Yeah.
And the fact is, no, that's what you made. You start every day at zero. And so when, because I didn't own those accounts, he could reassign them. He could do anything he wanted. I was at no control. And, you know, and now that I own my own business, oh, I have all my control. Yeah, right. But seriously, that's why I left. And I went out, started my little advertising agency with 9 retainer accounts that essentially covered my nut. And we were in the black from day one and did really well for about 18 months till I had a life-changing event. And my wife passed away. And then I spent a couple of years trying to figure out who I was all over again, another couple of years making it work. And then I met a guy named Roy. And I've been reading his books. In fact, my last year at KTRH, true story, hand to God, I ordered 2 cases of Wizard of Ads from Amazon. And handed it out to every one of my clients. And it was my Christmas present. And I remember one of my clients going, I read that book, and the guy's mostly right. He's dead wrong on a few things. I went, yeah, okay, got it. And so, but then I went up to Wizard Academy and took my first course, and which was, you know, there are ways to go to Wizard Academy, and if I was going to write a story of my life, Dave, the name of the book would be The Hard Way to Do Everything. And so my first course at Wizard Academy was Magical Worlds.
I think that's probably the best way to do it.
I paid retail.
Well, okay, you paid retail.
Yeah, exactly. And worth every penny because it totally changed my brain. And Roy got under my skin and – really helped me figure out how to, as partners know, how to leverage my unleveraged assets and do something phenomenal. And it was like when you think about your life, you think about who are the Mount Rushmore people in your life.
Yeah,
you know. And I think about Bill Moffitt, who moved me to Texas. You know, I think about Tracy, my first wife, I think about Ray Russell, who hired me at Kick and then KTRH. And he saved my life twice, honest to God, because after he left Kick, you know, when Kick and Kilt merged here in Houston, and it just got to be an ugly place, and I changed to another radio station in between the two, where we basically spent every penny we had in the bank and were broke, and we were literally considering putting everything we cared about in the car and driving away. And that next day, Ray Russell called and asked me to come work at KTRH. I mean, literally, he saved my life twice. And and then Roy, because they were the people who really shaped where I wound up going in my life.
Well, that's a really cool story, Charlie. So, you know, one of the things – I mean, really, really cool story. Thank you for sharing that. And I know we've got lots of stuff that we could talk about. One of the things that I want to know is in particular is how you work with clients in the Houston area and other places, the kinds of things that you're doing for them now. And I know that you've got some other kind of cutting edge strategies that you're using involving video, and we may just kind of hold off on some of that for a few weeks from now, if that's all right.
Yeah, no, I'd love to come back and talk about the video thing. It's we do a lot of different things, and they're really I kind of have a split personality in the sense that, you know, my Wizard of Ads business is really my focus, and then we also have a home improvement radio show we do as part of a separate company, and it is a and that was actually part that came with me out of KTRH essentially. That's a long story. Bottom line is we do it here on a local radio station, and we originate the thing from our own studio here in the office, and the guy is an institution in Houston in home improvement radio, and it enables us to do a lot of it enables us to practice a lot of what we preach with clients. But in terms of this is how you do, we were able to test a lot of things, almost like a Petri dish for us for things we take out and do with clients. But you know, we do the approach to our business is I'd like to say how we approach clients, but I really don't anymore. They approach me.
Mm-hmm.
That's a beautiful thing. We look for, you know, people who are, you know, unilateral decision makers, people who are good at what they do, people who are have a long time horizon, and they have the money, mm-hmm. right? And are willing to dine regularly on slaughtered, fatted calf, you know, on the sacred cow. You know what I mean? If you're willing to dine on sacred cow, I think we could get along.
Sure.
And because otherwise, you know, you're hiring me to keep doing what you're doing and take the blame for it. And I got kids to blame me for everything that's wrong. I don't need you. And
Charlie, is most of your business in the Houston area?
Yeah, and that's something we're working on. We've got actually have some opportunities we're working on to get out of town. And that's been largely because we're, you know, the radio show has kind of – that's why actually when I became a Wizard of Ads partner, one of the things I was excited about was leaving that name behind a little, because it was so associated with that show that people think of it as just things to do with that show.
With Mojo Media, you mean?
Mojo Media and the Home Improvement Show, Home Show Radio. And it's a beautiful thing. I love Tom. And Tom Tynan and I have worked together for – in a couple of weeks, it'll be 20 years.
Wow.
Yeah. And we talk to each other and fight like an old married couple. I mean, it is scary the way we talk to each other, but we get each other, you know, and that's, and that takes time to get that kind of thing. But, you know, we have today, you know, in my business today in Wizard of Ads, I have clients with me now who were with me when I started Mojo Media. Literally been with us that long.
I came from the radio station to Mojo Media.
No. Yeah, well, yeah, one of them. Yeah, but others are ones that I brought into Mojo Media later. Yeah, but yeah, but Nelson Water Gardens is one of them. We've been with them forever. And I mean, they are now, you know, shipping their stuff nationwide. We do TV for them. We develop their website for them. We help them a lot of their messaging. And I love to tell people that it's a perfect example of why what we do for one client, we don't ever do for another one.
Mm-hmm.
And that's because we spend 88% of their annual marketing budget in 5 weeks. And it's all about an event that they drive every year. And in the 10-plus years I've been working with them, it has never rained on that day. I don't know why it is. And now I'm probably calling it out for this year. But we're in Texas, so I'm not worried about rain. And it has consistently lifted their business and carried it all year long. It's called Garden Party, and we do TV and radio and internet, and now we're doing special web videos for them, and that gets into the stuff we were going to talk about later. But and it's just been that's just a great business and an example of people that we've been around with forever. And it's also an example of how you asked how I work with clients, of how we work with clients in the sense that, you know, I don't come in and, you know, roll up my sleeves and put my hands on my hips and say, okay, here's how it's going to be. I'm not there to direct. I'm there to consult and advise.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and as we like to say, you know, I'm never going to fight them, but I will fight for them. But I'll also tell them when they're going the wrong way. And if they want to go that way, I'll salute. go off and help make it happen the way they want, the best I can. But I let them know this is not the way to go. And that's really what it's about, because the thing I will fight and die for is when they're going off course from their star, you know, that North Star message that we find for them. But other than that, you know, people... people are going to do what they're going to do. I mean, you can't save them from themselves. And after a while, they start to trust you more and more. And that's really what it's about. And I think that's part of why, like, you know, in your business and mine, Dave, people come to us.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a very different approach that most people are used to, you know. And the radio show about, you know, when we started it, you know, we started producing it ourselves 10 plus years ago. I started a website for it, and I remember the general manager at the radio station said, "Well, don't get distracted by that website now. You keep focusing on the radio show." I'm like, "Yeah, yeah, okay, right, yeah, yeah, yeah." And I said to her, I said, "There's going to come a day when instead of the radio show promoting the website's going to promote the radio show." And we crossed that tipping point a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
We have more page views, more visitors, more podcast audience coming off the website than we do off the stick. And it makes it a powerful combination, because we're a radio show, we're a website, we're video, we're all those three things rolled into one, and enables me to preach the integrated marketing gospel to people based on real proof. Here it is. This is what we do. And it gives you a certain credibility when you're talking to people.
Well, I look forward to hearing more about that. And we've been going here quite a while here, Charlie.
Oh, good Lord. Yeah,
I know. Look at the
couple
time.
Old radio guys. Look at the old clock on the wall. Says,
you know, I was thinking about this. The fun part about interviewing anybody that's had any kind of significant background or experience in radio is the interview conducts itself.
Yeah,
you know,
and I will tell you, David, after listening to a lot of yours, it is you are gifted in letting a conversation breathe, and you do a great job with these, and I'm really tickled pink to be invited to be on here with you.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that, and I'm looking forward to talking to you more. Next time people see Charlie Mojer in the headline on Branding Blog, they'll know that we're not just reminiscing. We're going to be talking about some nuts and bolts things, some actual examples, and maybe we'll even be able to post some of your videos so that we can use those
sure.
as examples.
Yeah. The online video thing is. The one that gets bantied around the most is that a properly formatted video is 50 times more likely to get you on the front page of Google. And the key in that, in the asterisk everybody skips over, is the properly formatted. And mm-hmm. we'll talk about that next time we get together, because that is as we say in the marketing business, a vertical that we are going very deep in and getting great results with.
I can't wait to hear about it. Thank you so much, Charlie Mojer. That's going to wrap it up on Branding Blog Radio. I'm Dave Young. Thanks for listening.